Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. So this is our last show for a couple weeks because I will be heading to Japan. I'm going there. I've been invited by people who are anti-nuclear power, anti-nuclear weaponry, and they're also pro-worker, and they've been working really hard to hold the government of Japan and the Japanese power company TEPCO accountable for the Fukushima disaster. And so I'll be in Hiroshima on the day that the U.S. bombed Hiroshima with an atomic weapon. I'll be in Nagasaki that day, a few days later, on the anniversary of when the U.S. used a bomb, an A-bomb on Nagasaki. I'll be going to Okinawa because the U.S. has a lot of military bases there and the people of Japan are opposed to that. And I always stand with the people. And then I'll be going to Tokyo to do some mass actions against nuclear power and to hold the government of Japan accountable for the disaster that they've been very slow and ineffective in responding to. And so before I leave for Japan, I wanted to have an expert about the nuclear power and nuclear disaster issue. So our guest today is Arne Gunderson, and Arne is an energy advisor with 39 years of nuclear power engineering experience. He's a former nuclear industry senior vice president, and he earned his bachelor's and master's degree in nuclear engineering. Arne Gunderson, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you on. You do quite a bit of media concerning the nuclear power issue. And the reason I'm having you on is because next week I'm heading for Japan, and I'm going there with people who have invited me that are nuclear power and nuclear, against nuclear power, against nuclear bombs and things like that. And I'm going to Nagasaki, Hiroshima, Okinawa, and Tokyo. And so, first of all, I wanted you to give us an update on what's happening in Fukushima and about the, the dangers of the emissions and things that are still happening in Japan.
Okay. Again, thank you for having me. The Fukushima reactors continue to emit radiation every day. The Japanese estimate that they're emitting 24 billion disintegrations per second every day, in addition to what they've spewed out over the last 135 days. So
Right. It's
a significant number in and of itself. But more importantly, there's an awful lot of contamination on the ground all throughout Japan. We're finding concentrations higher than they were at Chernobyl, as far away as 50 and 60 miles from the Fukushima reactor. So a lot of that has fallen onto grass and straw, which is being fed to cattle, and now the cattle are becoming contaminated. So the Japanese haven't gotten a handle on the problem yet. Their government has been really slow to recognize the problem, and the press has been complacent in warning people of the problem. There's a lot of contamination throughout all of northern Japan, including Tokyo.
So, I'm not so sure. I work with the activists there from the Doro Chiba. I don't know if you know who they are. They're a pretty radical labor union, but they're also trying to hold the Japanese government accountable and TEPCO accountable for the disaster. I'm not sure that they were slow to recognize the problem, but it seems like they've been very slow to respond to the problem.
I think what's happening is a bunch of finger-pointing. The Japanese government wants TEPCO to step up to the plate and be responsible for everything. And TEPCO is focused on site, and is really leaving the off-site work to the Japanese. There's billions and billions of dollars here. I estimate to clean this thing up, it's going to be around $200 billion. That's not just the site, but the contaminated lands that are inland. And if TEPCO were the one to do all that, they would be bankrupt. So there's, a real hesitancy in the Japanese government to bankrupt TEPCO. And so therefore, they're not pushing them as hard as they should. But at the same time, the Japanese government isn't stepping up and saying, well, if TEPCO isn't doing this, we need to. So what you've got is a bunch of prefectures, some of which are active, and some of which don't know very much, because, of course, this is not a science that every prefecture has in its bag of tricks. So each prefecture is doing its own thing. And we had an example of this in an area near Tokyo. A citizen went out on the street and found a radioactive hotspot and had it analyzed. And he paid his own money for a laboratory to analyze this spot. And it was 50,000 disintegrations per second in the area of this hotspot. Well, he brought the lab report that he had paid for to the mayor of the town. The mayor said, I don't care.
Wow.
So you've got, yes, right. So it's a real concern.
So do you have any, advice for me going right into, I live on the West Coast. I live very close to San Francisco, and I feel like we had a little bit of the fallout come to California from Fukushima. But do you have any advice for me traveling to Japan at this time?
Yeah, let's talk about my advice for you in Japan versus my advice for people on the West Coast. My advice for you going to Japan is don't buy the local food. I would stay away from pretty much everything grown in northern Japan. Even southern Japan, tea is contaminated. But in general, most of the northern Japan products are contaminated. I would also, they already leave their shoes at the door, so the issues of taking outside contamination in are not as significant. I am telling all my friends in Japan that they should damp dust. Don't dry dust, because it'll throw the radiation back up.
But
damp dust all the surfaces in your house frequently, and change the filters in your air conditioner and your cabin filter on your car frequently. We've gotten air filters from cars that are just littered with radioactive
hot
particles. So it's important to you have to go and you have to be there, but you can take some personal precautions to make sure that you're avoiding as much of the radiation as you can.
Well, I was born in 1957, and I was born in Los Angeles, and there's been, proof that they were doing, we know that they were doing above ground nuclear testing during that time in, I think it was Nevada, and there was studies that were shown that the fallout blew over Southern California. Are we all contaminated at this point by these kinds of things? Is it like a natural, it's not natural, but is it normal that at this point humans on this planet have been contaminated by some kind of radiation?
Yeah, the bomb, actually, near L.A. in the late 50s was a nuclear meltdown at a research lab, and it was covered up for about 30 years. So the residents near L.A. experienced more than your average fallout as a result of a test reactor and the meltdown of it. But there's small amounts of radioactive cesium in the water and strontium in the water from bomb testing and from Chernobyl. But what Fukushima has done is dramatically increase those numbers worldwide. So yes, there already is some radioactivity. It decays away with time. So the bomb testing is the radiation. One is spread out globally now, and two, it's almost decayed away to about a quarter of what it was at the peak in the 60s. Whereas Fukushima has not spread out globally yet, and it hasn't decayed away. So it's there's a lot more of these radioactive hot particles in the air from Fukushima than there was before Fukushima, especially on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. Our website, we have a website, Fairwinds, F-A-I-R-E-W-I-N-D-S, and we actually had a piece on radioactive contamination detected in Seattle, and that was back in April. And I think there were some more washouts, rainouts in British Columbia just last weekend. So the source of the radiation hasn't been capped. And, of course, the first piece of land it hits when it comes across the Pacific is the West Coast.
Right.
So I don't think you're out of the woods yet.
Well, and then I also noticed on your website you had suggestions for people on the West Coast. Is it basically about the same as suggestions you have for people in Japan, in northern Japan?
It's pretty similar, except we don't have contaminated beef yet, and I don't think we will. So the issue of eating the beef is not a problem in the on the West Coast. Over time, I'm going to be very concerned about tuna and salmon, but it takes a while for this tuna to swim across the Pacific and the salmon also. So you get at the top of the food chain. The radioactivity will, what they call, bioaccumulate. So these the large fish that ate the smaller fish that ate the smaller fish will over time pick up significant quantities of cesium. But for the next year or so, I think it's okay to eat the eat tuna and salmon from the West Coast. What we need is the FDA to analyze it, and they have refused to analyze the fish coming into market into the United States.
Well, we see a similar thing happening here in the U.S. after the oil well exploded in the Gulf of Mexico, with them refusing to test the shrimp and other seafood from that area.
You're absolutely right. One of the researchers I'm working with on the Fukushima data is also involved in measuring what's in the shrimp. And the government is making it extraordinarily hard for good scientists to take good data. Basically, they're allowing BP to control the field and to control the information coming out of the oil fields. You know, I think our government... basically, you know, lobbyists have so fundamentally altered the way government should work that
right.
I don't think it's working in our best interest right now.
Well, and I talked to my colleagues in Japan, and their problems with handling Fukushima and TEPCO sound almost exactly like the same problems we're having in the U.S. Trying to deal with BP and the Gulf disaster, and it seems like it's the same kind of forces at work here.
You know, and it started on day one. If you remember Fukushima, the Japanese said, "Oh, it isn't even as bad as Three Mile Island," and then about 2 weeks later, they said, "Well, it might be as bad as Three Mile Island." And then about a month mm-hmm. later, they said, "Oh my God, it's as bad as Chernobyl." And so they underestimated the amount of radiation getting into the environment. And that happened with BP, too. They underestimated the size of the leak for weeks. Independent scientists
right.
were saying it's bad, and BP was underestimating. So it started right on day one in both cases. I absolutely agree with you.
Well, I wonder if the underestimation is intentional or what, because we just had a small like a microcosm of this happened just 4 miles away from me yesterday. A plastics company that makes plastic crates caught on fire, and it was this horrible fire, and they had horrible black smoke, just you know, dark black smoke pouring out of this fire, and the wind blew it over my house. So I have this black cloud of toxic chemicals over my house, and the news is just saying if you live within a mile of the plant to do, I think what they were calling a shelter and something, where you close all the windows and you turn off your air conditioning. However, it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it looked like it was 9 o'clock at night at my house. But the news is saying that it's safe if you're past 1 mile. Is it intentional, or are these people just stupid?
I've studied Three Mile Island, I've studied Chernobyl, and now I've studied this one. And I think human nature is to our natural gut reaction is to think it's really not as bad as it is. And so all of these people in authority downplay it because they don't want to create a panic, or they don't want to personally look like they're overreacting. But I think it's a bunch of, when you have bureaucrats, their first reaction is to protect the bureaucracy. And then they'll also protect the public, as opposed to the other way around. So I think none of them want to go out on a limb and say, oh, my God, it's really bad, like they should have at Three Mile Island, like they should have at Chernobyl, and now they should have at Fukushima. It's the way bureaucrats work in an emergency.
So you have also said that it's very possible that a disaster like Fukushima could happen here in the United States. Can you explain that, and then also tell my listeners anything that we can do to avert that kind of disaster that we can do, not the companies that build the nuclear power plants, not the companies that profit off of them, and not the government who keeps on telling us that it's safe?
Well, there's 23 reactors in the United States that are exactly like Fukushima. And those are on the East Coast and in the middle of the country. There's none in California. But the ones that are exactly like Fukushima have a containment called the Mark 1 containment. And now we're up to the Mark 4, so we're four generations better on the containments now. Well, the Mark 1 containment, when they built it, the NRC knew it was a bad design. And there's actually letters in the NRC saying we never should have licensed this. So it was, for the last 40 years, it's been one Band-Aid fix after another on this Mark 1 design. And at Fukushima, even with these Band-Aid fixes, all three containments blew up. So the containments don't work. I think we need to insist that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission do its job. And unfortunately, that's not a... We need to get a hold of our Congress people individually and say, I don't care how much a lobbyist is paying you for campaign contributions. I need you to pay attention to the NRC and get them to protect the public. The other part of it is that the nuclear spent fuel is stored indoors in spent fuel pools right now, and it should be stored in something called dry cask storage. Fukushima had both, and the dry casks worked just fine, but the fuel pools were very precarious. So we need to move out of the dry cask storage and into dry cask storage, rather, to better protect the public. Now, on the West Coast, you've got Diablo Canyon, which is right near a fault.
Right.
And actually, the public in the area of Diablo Canyon pushed very hard to get the NRC to pay attention, and they didn't. For years, the NRC said it's not a problem. But after Fukushima, the NRC turned and now said, oh, my God, this might be a problem. We need 4 more years to analyze it. So, unfortunately, it takes an accident to get their attention. A little further south down at San Onofre, they only have a 25-foot tsunami wall. And obviously, I think Fukushima told us we need a higher tsunami wall than that. But individually, with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the deck is stacked with the major industry players affecting policy and the public basically not affecting policy. So next time you see your congressperson in the mall or something like that shaking hands, tell them, I need you to pay attention to this, and I don't care what the industry's saying, you're not looking out for our best interest.
Well, and then you look at Japan, and it appears, you know, it seems to me that everybody is affected, even the children and the grandchildren of the people that work for TEPCO, or the people who are in the government in Japan who, you know, aren't responding, effectively or appropriately to this disaster. And, you know, this disaster affects anybody. It doesn't matter how rich you are or how much, you know, protection that you think you have is, or, you know, if you are a congressperson or a senator, or if you own a nuclear power plant, the ultimate failure is going to affect you, and it's going to affect our planet and, you know, future of life on the planet.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, there's about 5,000 people who work in that plant, who are really every day putting their lives on the line. They're picking up radiation exposures that you can be sure will cause additional cancers. It's likely that whatever their cancer rate was, it's going to go up by 10 to 20% because of what they're going to receive from this accident. Which means that of that 5,000, you know, perhaps as many as another 500 people will pick up a cancer in their lifetime because they're out there trying to save the nation of Japan. So there's 5,000 very brave people, or very foolish, I'm not sure which, but
yeah.
Our hat should be off to. The bureaucrats, you know, seem to stay back in Tokyo where the exposures are a lot less, and they really don't understand the sacrifice that is being made by a bunch of nuclear workers in a very precarious situation.
Well, you are an expert on this subject. Is there any safe nuclear power?
Well, what I've said all along is that we should never build another coal or oil plant because of global warming. Mm-hmm. We should push like crazy on renewables and conservation. And what Fukushima has done is it's dramatically raised the cost of new nuclear power. And now new nuclear power actually costs more than renewables. So it's been the economics of the issue have actually pushed nuclear to be more expensive than wind and solar. Now, new nuclear units, Wall Street won't touch them. So that we've got a situation now after Fukushima where it doesn't have to be the pro and the anti argument anymore. It's not a religious argument, you know, a Christ and an antichrist. This is an issue about money. And new nuclear units have become so expensive that the renewable sources of energy can take the field. So I think that what will happen in the future is the new power coming online will not be nuclear because they're just so expensive.
Well, and like you said, the coal plants are horrible for our environment also. And we have a president now who's a big advocate of the myth of clean coal.
Well, Obama's key advisors and key financial backers early on came from a company called Exelon. And Exelon owns 17 nuclear plants. They're the largest nuclear company in the country, and they also own a lot of coal plants. So if we're expecting new thought out of the Obama administration, I don't think we're going to get it, because the advisors to the administration are predominantly people who are part of the old system.
Mm-hmm.
You know the term Maginot Line? After World War I, the French built line of defenses. And it was designed really to prevent a World War One from happening again. But, of course, the German technology improved, and they flew over it and they ran around it. And I'm afraid by focusing on this old, expensive central nuclear power plant paradigm that we're building another Maginot Line. We're spending hundreds of billions in public resources on, well, $100 billion will get you about 8 nuclear power plants. So we're going to spend $100 billion on these 8 nuclear plants, effectively a Maginot Line, when that money could much better be spent on a smart grid and new technology. What we've got is the old concept of a big power plant was needed in the 20th century. That's the way we had to make power in the 20th century. But now in the 21st century, we've got smart grids, we've got distributed generation, and computers that can handle all that. So that rather than build a Maginot Line with 8 or 10 nukes and hundreds of billions of dollars in the process, I think we would be better looking towards smart grids and renewables.
Well, I agree, Arnie. Thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox today. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but give your website again so my listeners can get more information, because there's way more information on your website than we were able to cover in this short show.
Sure, thank you. It's Fairwinds, and it's got an E in the middle, FairewindsWinds.com.
Well, Arnie Gunderson, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for taking the time to be a guest on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox today. Well, that was our guest, Arnie Gunderson. I hope you visit his website. And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, and I hope you all, you know, send me great vibes that I don't become, that I don't come back glowing from Japan. But like Arnie said, it's necessary that I go there and bear witness to what's happening around the world and, you know, just to take the necessary precautions. So as always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, and my producer, Mikey, our guest, Arnie Gunderson, and you especially for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan, and you've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. We'll talk to you in a few weeks. Peace out.
Make my witness. I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work. Scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest, I don't want you to riot, I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, God damn it, my life has value.
get up now. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore! Just get up from your chairs right now. Go stick your head out and yell and keep yelling, I'm as mad as hell, I'm not going to take this anymore! Just get up from your chairs!
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.